Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, January 5th. I'm Ray Graff. The temperature is well below freezing. The snow piles have grown. In Studio A to discuss a very timely topic, a warm and fuzzy topic for a Food Friday. Well, not fuzzy, but warm. Soups and stews to help you shake your winter blues. It's a Food Friday All-Star. Deanna Fox is here. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. You got a question about soup? I've had some of the soup. It's good. She knows what she's doing. 800-348-2551, the number on this Food Friday. Soups, stews, your calls. Deanna Fox coming up after the news. Hi, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's a frigid day, so with us in the studio on this Food Friday to help you shake that cold is Deanna Fox, and she brought delicious soups and stews with her. You know, our producer Jim Lavoulis books these shows well in advance, and sometimes the date and the program are an odd combination. Yesterday was a gardening show.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a
good day for gardening.
Turned out to be a good gardening show. Today, the timing is perfect because there is nothing more perfect than a nice hot bowl of soup or stew on a day like today. Always great to have Deanna Fox here. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
If you are interested in giving us a call, we would love to hear from you. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, always more exciting to hear a phone call from a listener at 800-348-2551. Well, the soup is good.
Thank you, sir.
You make a good soup. What did you make us?
I made it with you in mind. I made Italian wedding soup today.
It's so tasty. And the meatballs are great. Tell us what goes in this.
All right. So you start with the meatballs. So I used a blend, a 50-50 blend of pork and beef. And when you're doing fat content, you want like an 80-20 mix.
Yeah.
Because the fat is where you get a lot of the flavor, and it does kind of, you know, you lose a lot of the fat, but it's a good combo. So you got your meat, you got some breadcrumbs, you have an egg, there is dried oregano, some fresh parsley, there's a bunch of Parmesan cheese, some crushed red pepper, and then nutmeg. Nutmeg is the secret.
Oh, that is a secret ingredient.
Secret ingredient.
But
yes.
I love the oregano too.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Good. And you don't want these meatballs, when you're putting meatballs in soup, you don't want them to be like real loose. Like a lot of times when you make meatballs, like for spaghetti and meatballs, they'll tell you to soak the bread in milk.
Yeah.
So it stays really moist. You don't want to do that here or else they'll fall apart.
Right.
Because they're going to be soaking up more moisture. So you cook the meatballs, you brown them up beforehand, set them aside, make the soup. The soup is really easy. It's basically like a vegetable pasta soup. It's got onion, carrot, celery, garlic. It has celery leaves. Mm. People always buy the heart of celery, and it makes me like so enraged. I want to like just rip all the hearts of celery out of the grocery store.
Really? So this really enrages you?
Yes.
Very interesting.
Eat the leaves. The leaves are the tastiest part. They're the best part of the celery. And you throw the garlic in there. There's kale. So all you kale haters, this is a thing you can do with kale.
It's the second time in my life I've had kale. It's very good.
Awesome. Yeah. But you can do any kind of green, any kind of hearty green. Spinach, escarole, whatever you got. Cabbage if you wanted to. And then salt, pepper, some couscous we use for the pasta. So you get the little tiny, you can use like ditalini and stuff, but I like couscous.
Yeah, very good.
It's the Israeli couscous, so it's a little bit bigger, but couscous is just little tiny balls of pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw your meatballs in there and then you season it at the end. So a little bit salt if it needs it, some pepper. I put a little bit of red wine vinegar.
Ah.
I think that when people eat soup, when people eat things in general, they taste it and it doesn't quite taste vibrant. It tastes a little flat, so they think it needs more salt. So they just add salt until it tastes like something. And it's usually not what it needs. It needs acid, so it needs a little vinegar or some lemon. Then when you have it seasoned, you throw the meatball in, let everything kind of just simmer together for a bit, and there you have it.
And where did you cook this?
I cooked it in my house stove in a new pot.
That's what I was driving at. And so what kind of pot did we use?
Thanks, Mam and Pat Fox. Thanks, folks. They bought me a nice new Le Creuset, an oval 9-quart Dutch oven today.
Okay, and how long did you cook this?
I actually cooked it. It doesn't take a long time to cook. You cook the meatballs, and the meatballs, you know, you do them in batches. And they're little guys. You can make them whatever size you want. They're not, these aren't like the tiny ones that you'll get in like the pre-made can.
SpaghettiOs.
Yeah. They're about, what would we say, like an inch maybe?
Yeah.
They're about an inch.
They're perfect.
And a little two-biter maybe, depending on the size of your mouth.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And the meatballs take a minute. You can start the soup while the meatballs are cooking. And all in all, it takes maybe start to finish chopping vegetables and everything, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. But then I just let it simmer until just before I left. And I brought in my amazing cooler that had warm towels stuffed inside of it to keep the soup
warm. This is what
warm.
I was going to say. You come from a fair distance away. It is very cold out.
Yum.
And this soup is hot. And yeah. I couldn't be happier about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I buckled it into my heated leather seat in my car.
Oh, really? Kept it warm?
Kept it nice and toasty.
And the bread is delicious. You make the bread yourself?
I did. Yes. I had the wonderful pleasure of interviewing, about a year ago, a lovely local woman from Schenectady, Niskayuna, named Allie Stafford. And she released a book called Bread Toast Crumbs. And it's all these like really simple, easy bread recipes. So I made her basic peasant bread recipe that was her mom, so that's that. And then I made another that was like a riff on something that she had with a little bit of rosemary and olives in it.
I love the olive bread.
Yeah, me too.
Really
so good.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call or two before the first break. 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is our guest. Soups and stews today, the topic on a Food Friday. And Bailey in Pittsfield is first. Bailey.
Hi, how are you? So I had a question about how to make a good tomato soup. And the problem I've always had, I've only ever tried to make it a couple times, and I wanted to call before I tried to make it again. It always comes out extremely watery,
mm-hmm.
or it comes out way overly thick, almost close to a bisque.
Okay.
And now my grandmother says that everyone knows how to make a tomato soup. It's just open a can of Campbell's. but I just was wondering, you know, do you have a good recipe that doesn't require a whole ton of ingredients and a quick way to just make a good tomato soup?
Yeah. Do you want to put cream in it or no cream?
It doesn't matter either way.
Okay.
The recipes I've tried usually call for like a chicken broth or water, and that time it came out way too watery.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know what to put into it to make it thicker.
I would start with the actual tomato that you're using. So use like a tomato puree versus a, which is not tomato paste. So tomato puree versus like a whole tomato, a whole canned tomato that you would crush up with your hands. So starting with the actual tomato product being a little bit thicker will help. And then you can adjust from there. And then are you blending it? Are you putting it in a blender or are you just kind of...
No, I'm kind of doing it all by hand and just, you know, in a bowl and then, you know, kind of letting it slowly cook on the stove.
Yeah. You can, there's a couple things you can do. So you can start the tomatoes, like I just said, like do like a crushed tomato to start with or a tomato puree instead of like a tomato sauce or just a whole tomato that you'll crush with your hands because that's going to automatically add more water just because it's a thinner product. You could also take some white bread, which is like an old classic French, Italian grandma thing. And cook the bread into the soup, and it kind of dissolves and just thickens it up, adds a ton of starch and gluten. If you're anti-bread, you can add a little bit of cream, but I would tell you sometimes when I want to make a soup and I want it to have a little bit of texture, I'll just take like half of the soup and I'll blend it in my blender. And I'll leave the, you know, you got to accommodate for the steam. So you leave a little bit of an air gap in the top or you put a towel over the little, you know, cap in the center that comes off so the steam can release. Or you can just, if you have like a hand blender or like a potato masher or something to kind of mash it up by hand, just kind of smooth out the texture a little bit and thicken it up. Because sometimes a tomato soup recipe, it calls for a ton of cream. And I don't always think it makes a better product. It makes it nice and smooth, but not always better. So start with your tomato, try bread, try blender.
All right, great. Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Bailey. Bread? Really?
Yeah.
This is an old trick.
Old trick.
I've not heard of this.
Yes.
You just take a half a loaf of bread and throw it in?
No, just like a couple of slices.
Really?
Yeah.
Just regular bread.
Regular old bread. If it's a really crusty bread, cut the crust off so you just have that the nice crumb on the inside.
And it dissolves and gives body to
yes.
the...
Yeah.
I'll be darned. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We talk soup and stew today on a Food Friday with Deanna Fox. And Lisa and Housatonic is next. Lisa.
Hi, yeah. I have two questions. The first one is, I'm wondering, everybody's all on about bone broth as opposed to regular broth. And I'm wondering what the difference between bone broth, broth, stock, and then I think it's consomme is another kind of brothy thing.
Sure.
And then the other question I have is, every time I use the crock pot when I cook meat, the meat ends up sort of chalky, and I didn't know if there was something that you could, that I could do about this. And I can hang up for the question.
Thanks, awesome. Lisa. Right.
Okay, Lisa, thanks for that question. Those are both really two really interesting things. So the first thing, bone broth, I hate that term so much.
It's a very trendy thing, right?
It is. It's super trendy. But broth, unless you're making a vegetable broth, broth automatically just has bones in it. It has meat. So I think broth and stock are pretty much interchangeable. Most of the time when people refer to a stock, it refers to roasting everything first, so you end up with a heartier, richer product at the end. So bone broth, just throw that term away. That's garbage. Stock is just when you put everything in the pot, cover it with water, and let it kind of cook for however long. Stock is when you roast everything first, so it develops more flavor, and then put it in the pan or the pot with the water and then cook it. And then consomme is when you take either of those things and you clarify it. So you get all the little gunky things out of there. For me, when I do it, I put it in a pressure canner. I pressure can all of my stock, and just that additional heat clarifies it naturally, and then you get like sediment on the bottom. So there's that. And then with your meat problem, I think what's happening is you're not getting your meat brown enough first, so it's just kind of steaming and getting chalky. So if you have the crock pot or the slow cooker that has the actual bowl that comes out, those are pretty heat sturdy, and you can put it on a low setting on your stove and brown it. Otherwise, brown your meat first and then put it into your crock pot. And the other thing, too, is depending on what you're making, you need to allow for some of the steam to come out, depending on what it is that you're trying to make. So you can put just like a small wooden spoon in to create a little gap to let some of the steam out. Some of them have a little gauge that you can open and close to let steam out, but you're probably not browning your meat first. And
all right,
it's getting like a chalky thing.
Deanna Fox is our guest. We'll take a quick break here on a Food Friday. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. You got a soup question? You got a stew question? Deanna Fox is here. We'll be back.
Support for WMT comes from Finn, your fishmonger, Gilderland, bringing fresh seafood to the capital region, salmon, ahi tuna, haddock, oysters, and more, alongside chef-prepared ceviche, crudo, and po' boys, fresh, sustainable, memorable, finshops.com. The Egremont Barn, bringing music, food, entertainment, and community to the Berkshires, this week's artists at theegremontbarn.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee. BlackSheepDeli.com. Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats, home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days. Pekarsky's.com. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thornton's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts, dairy and no-moo dairy-free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more, Harrells.com. And Silver Bay YMCA Conference and Family Retreat Center on Lake George, providing a hometown atmosphere for conferences and families for more than a century, SilverBay.org.
Okay, enough choreography with the engineering department. That's good. It's a Food Friday here. Ray Graff, 800-348-2551, the number. Our guest, Vox Pop Food Friday Hall of Famer, Deanna Fox. You made mulled wine. Pretty darned good.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us.
I grew up out near the Finger Lakes where they put Riesling in your baby bottle. And, I was out there with my mom, and we went to a winery we haven't been to before, but have had the wine, and they had a mulled white wine, which I didn't even know was possible. And so I bought a bottle of the wine they were using. They said, when you use white, to use something medium-bodied and un-oaked.
Okay.
So Vidal Blanc is what I grab. Okay. It's fermented with the skins on. It's
really
awesome.
The grape skins are on.
Yeah, so it makes this like almost like a sunset orange color. It's
beautiful.
Really pretty. And I just put it in a pot with some honey.
This will be in a crock pot or just a regular pot?
You can do it in a crock pot, but I just did it in a little Dutch oven with oranges, orange slices, some ginger, cardamom pods, cloves, allspice. It's on the website. And a little brandy at the end just to fortify it.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Well,
high test, eh? So it's on your website. And what is your website?
It's on, well, my website is foxonfood.com.
Oh, it's on our website?
But it's on the WAMC website.
Pay me to take a look at it once in a while, eh? Okay. A couple of emails before we get back to the phones. This one is from Ann and Adams. First, Ray, I love the gardening show. It took my mind off the terrible weather. You know, that's true. And it was a popular program. And amazing how many people just wanted to talk about getting outside and doing some gardening. Here's the soup question from Ann and Adams. I recently made pasta fagioli, and it's horrible and boring. It's a basic tomato sauce with carrots and some onion. The recipe I used seemed a bit too basic, but it would make a great base for something zippier. Deanna, can you suggest something zippier to pump it up? Pump up that pasta fagioli.
Pasta fagioli. So the problem with pasta fagioli, I think a lot of times, is people leave the noodles in for too long.
They get droopy.
And it gets a little sad, and it dilutes the flavor. So, again, that's probably an instance where you need a little acid in there. So probably a little white wine vinegar, or even if you have a little leftover red wine, you could pop that in there a little bit. And some tomato paste into it to help to thicken it up a little bit. Let it reduce a little bit, and you could just throw that over pasta, and it would be like a loose pasta sauce.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. You know, I got to say, your point about the vinegar in the soup, the mm-hmm. Italian wedding soup, is great. And during the break, I had another spoonful. Yeah. And you're right. It's not too salty, but it's got a lot of taste.
It just like perks it up a little bit.
Yeah.
It like hits you in the front of the mouth when you eat it.
And that's what we all want. This is from Betsy in Frigid, Albany. What do you think of this whole instant pot craze? Do you see them having a role in making decent soups and stews?
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of instant pot.
Yeah. So instant pot is just a brand name for a pressure cooker. Not a pressure cooker that you put on the stove, a pressure cooker that you plug into the wall.
Oh.
So, man, they sell like gangbusters. There's a lot of people who love them. There's a blogger who lives in the Capital District. Her name is Elizabeth Barbone. You can find her online, and she does a lot of cooking with the Instant Pot, and it is great.
It's basically a pressure cooker.
It's a pressure cooker, but it's a multi-use pressure cooker, so you can cook rice in it. You can use it as a slow cooker. If you're doing beans or chickpeas or something, if you do them dried, it will rehydrate them really, really fast. But it is great. You have to be mindful of the timing, and I think that's the biggest part. When it says something that would take 3 hours to cook can be cooked in 30 minutes, that means 30 minutes under pressure. So
right.
Once it hits the right pressure point, 30 minutes from there. But it's great, and it won't blow up your house.
Not anymore. We've done a pressure cooker show. In the old days, grandmas might have blown up your house. You make soup in pressure cookers, too.
Yeah, and the one thing with a pressure cooker that you have to be mindful of is that when you're cooking on the stovetop, you're converting under that heat, converting a lot of the carbohydrates and the proteins into carbon. And that's where you get like a browning. So when you cook a steak and it gets brown, it goes to this reaction called the Maillard reaction, and it converts the protein into carbon. Carbon equals flavor. When you do it in a pressure cooker, you don't get that process. So my trick is to add just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of baking soda.
Really?
Like an eighth of a teaspoon.
Isn't that likely to make your pressure cooker explode?
No.
Really?
Well, I mean, if you did a whole bunch of baking soda and vinegar, then you'd be in trouble.
Okay.
But just a tiny bit. And what that does is it alters the acidity in it and creates a similar. So if you're making like a carrot ginger soup where you want to be browning the carrots or something, just adding that little bit helps to create the same flavor.
All right. This one is from Adrian, and then we'll get back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Adrian in New Paltz. The subject heading, franchise soups on. Ask guest, that's you, if this franchise is still around.
I don't know.
I've never heard of it.
Me either.
Says it's a great concept in cold weather. But I've never heard of this. Maybe one of our listeners will know.
Yeah.
Back to the phones we go with Deanna Fox. And let's go to Nancy in Schenectady. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. Actually, I have more of a suggestion, I guess, than a question right
Splendid.
Now. I have occasions where I'm making soups for people who, well, there will be several vegans and a couple of vegetarians, and then the people who like meat and so forth. And I've found that I can make either a basic potato soup or a basic pumpkin soup with using the blender to make it nice and rich and creamy, which doesn't require cream, as you guys pointed out earlier. Just blending it with the onions and the celery leaves and so forth makes a very tasty and creamy kind of base. And then other vegetables like cauliflower, green beans, whatever, carrots, floating in it, which is wonderful. And then on the side, little bowls of grated cheese and bacon bits and so forth. So those who want something more of that sort can add it to their own bowl, and those who don't want it can just go without it.
That's very considerate of you.
It works
out
very well for a mixed crowd.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. And yeah, you're right. Adding that blender, putting a little bit in the blender to aerate it, gives it that creamy texture, and people never know there's no cream.
Yeah, they'll ask.
Yeah.
They think, oh, there must be cream in here.
Yeah.
Well, Nancy, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend and stay warm, okay?
I'm going to make soup.
Good for you. Thank you very much. Let's go over to Susan and Lennox. Susan, you're on. Hello, goodbye. Oh, Susan, you waited and it was your turn and you had performance anxiety. Well, we'll put you back on. Kathy and Gilderland. Kathy, you're on.
Yes, I just wanted to know how we could get the recipe for the Italian wedding soup.
It's top secret.
No, it's not. It should be on the WAMC website. If it's not up now, it should be up soon.
Okay, that's a note to our producer, Jim Lavoulis. Make sure it's up
Jim.
There.
Okay.
Okay, it should be WAMC.org. Okay. You'll see a listing right on the front page for Food Friday, and hopefully it'll be there. And Kathy, thank you.
And if it's not Kathy, I'm going to put it up on Fox on Food after I get out of here. So foxonfood.com.
Foxonfood.com. And you're also on Facebook with that?
Sure, yeah. Facebook.com/foxonfood.
All right, fair enough. Bobby on the Northway. Bobby, you're on.
Hi, how are you? My grandmother was from Hungary, and she used to make a soup with caraway seeds, and she called them nukalis, which were like stringy dough dumplings, but you almost never see it on any menu in your general restaurants throughout the area. Are you familiar with any of that type of a soup?
It's probably like a spatzel, right? Where you push the dumpling. It's probably...
It is a string dumpling.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's probably what most people know it as, I would think.
Okay.
But I've never had a caraway seed soup.
Caraway seed soup, tasty, Bobby?
Well, my wife is in here. She says that you. What do you do, Susan? You put butter in caraway seeds?
You make a roux first, and you have to, and then you pop the caraway seeds in the hot butter.
Mm-hmm.
You toast them a little bit, and it takes a long time to get it dark and brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what I did, it was called a peasant soup. It was, you add a little bit of water to that, and then it's basically creamy butter, flour, water, and the toasted caraway seeds. But then I added wine and mushrooms to it.
And the nice. Origin was the caraway seeds could be kept forever in a jar for peasants and not need refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
and then be made soup into it. So that was just the initial thing. I just thought it's like mushroom, but a little bit darker and a little bit more aromatic.
That sounds lovely.
That really does sound great. Hey, drive safely, Bobby, and thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Our guest today, Deanna Fox, who is a freelance food and agriculture writer in the Capital District. You've seen her on the web all over the place. Her website is foxonfood.com or on Facebook under Fox on Food. And let's go to Chuck in Hudson. Chuck, you're on.
How you doing? I heard you talking about bread and tomato soup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if I can put that in sauce, pasta sauce.
I wouldn't see.
Bread, just bread, make it thicker.
Yeah, I wouldn't see why not. But you want to use just, if you have like a really crusty bread, just make sure that you kind of cut the crust off. And you can turn that into breadcrumbs or something later.
Right. But okay, you have a nice day.
Yeah, thank you.
I got to say, this olive bread is really, you said it was underdone. It seems perfect.
Yeah, so what I didn't do, normally if you're going to add something into a bread, And I should have followed Allie's recipe a little bit better. Sorry, Allie. You take whatever additive you're going to throw in and you toss in a little extra flour. And that little coating of flour helps to keep it suspended. So if you look at it, like all the olives are on the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
that's gravity. That happens with age, too.
Yes. Well, we'll just toss you in flour and see how you float along.
Okay. Let's just leave that alone. Let's go to Hudson and Cairo. Hudson, you're on.
Oh, hi, everybody. I'm loving this show. Well, all this talk about bread and soups reminded me of two of my favorite soups that I learned in Italy back in college 1,000 years ago. And Deanna might know them. One is called Papa al Pomodoro, and the other is Ribollita. And they're really just poor people's food. You know, they're really just made of kind of leftovers, but they're wonderful for this weather. Ribollita just means reboiled, and you just kind of throw anything that you have in, you know, root vegetables, cabbage, beans, whatever, and, you know, some water, and let it cook down, then take it off the heat, and a few hours later after it's cooled, you reheat it, and when you reheat it, you put in the stalest bread that you have. It needs to be really stale because, and it, unlike using the bread as a thickener, you really want it to retain its character as chunks, you know, because I think the original idea was that it took the place of meat because, it, like I said, it's peasant food. So when people couldn't afford meat, they used this, but it still had a lot of flavor in it. Mm-hmm. And that soaks up all the wonderful flavors of the vegetable soup that, you know, have been marinating and kind of blending over the last hours together, and it's just a wonderful wintry, hearty kind of thing, and it's cheap. You know, it's really great for. I mean, I was doing it when I was a student, but you know, it's good.
Well,
for
yeah,
anybody.
I think that's the thing that's so nice about soup is that you're able to just kind of take whatever you have and make something out of it. So
yeah,
slapdash it all together, fridge soup.
Well, it's not that easy, Hudson. Thank you for the call. Believe me,
it's not that easy.
You just don't throw stuff in and hope for the best.
Well, you have to have a little rhyme and reason to it. But if you have some vegetables, if you have some sort of protein, whether it's a meat or a bean or whatever, you got water and something to flavor it with, you got soup.
All right, fair enough.
Stone soup, Mr. Graff.
That's right.
That's right.
It's an old folk song, right? Susan and Lennox. Susan, you're on.
Hi. I'm looking for a vegetarian broth or bouillon to start the soup with, and my problem is that the ones that I've been using, I shouldn't be using any longer because they're all so full of salt. Mm-hmm. So I need a low-salt alternative if you can recommend one.
I don't have a brand that I could recommend. I'm not sure which brands have the least amount of salt. Usually you can find a vegetable stock that will say, you know, low-salt or no-salt added. But the best thing I could tell you to do is if you have a little bit of freezer space and a couple hours, just take all your vegetable scraps. You want some celery and some carrot and some onion, garlic. If you have some parsley stems left over, a few whole peppercorns. I put a few cloves in mine, like five cloves maybe. And then you just cook that with water and bring it up to a boil and then let it simmer and pull out all those flavors, no salt added. You can put it in Ziploc, you know, or zip-top bags or quart containers that you leave like an inch of headspace in, and then you have it whenever you need it. But I can't tell you what brand. I'm not sure what brand would be low salt for vegetable.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Susan. We appreciate the call. And don't forget to use the celery leaves, right, when you're
the
doing
leaves,
that?
The leaves, yes.
Do that.
Yep.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is our guest. Joyce in Grand Gorge. Joyce, you're on.
Yes. I just made cream of tomato soup for our lunch.
Nice.
From home canned tomatoes from 2015, last quart that I had. But the recipe came from Better Homes and Gardens cookbook from 50 years ago, and mm-hmm. it's cream of tomato soup, starting with a 1 pound, 12-ounce can of tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I could read you the recipe.
That I would say Better Homes and Gardens cream of tomato, that's got to be online. So,
oh, yeah. It must be.
I'm
yes.
sure people could probably find
but
it.
But if you start with whole tomatoes or diced mm-hmm. or fresh tomatoes from mm-hmm. the garden and then you put in the onion and the bay leaf and the sugar and salt. Then you have to strain it, sieve it, run it through so that you don't have seeds and skin.
Right.
And then you make a cream sauce with butter, flour, and milk, if you're not using real cream. And you combine the two and just warm it up without boiling it.
Right.
Okay?
Sounds awesome.
Well, thank
awesome.
You very
thank
much.
You, Joyce.
800-348-2551, the telephone number. Let's take a break, Zach the engineer. Deanna Fox is our guest on a Food Friday, and we'll hit the home stretch in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years, the-gazebo.com. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer, offering organically farmed wines from around the world, wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Now crafting black garlic and black garlic products in small batches. BlackGarlicSeaSalt.com for more information. And Big Elm Brewing. Tap room open Thursday through Saturdays, noon to 6 p.m. Crafting ales and lagers in Sheffield, Massachusetts since 2012. BigElmBeer.com.
Soups and stews today on Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Deanna Fox, a couple of quick emails here and then back to the phones. This one's from Alan. Subject heading, Brunswick stew. Does Ms. Fox have a recipe for Brunswick stew?
No, but we've talked about that so many times on
really?
The show.
Have, yeah. Was I here?
Yeah.
I don't remember anything about Brunswick stew. Tell me about Brunswick stew.
I don't even know what's all in Brunswick stew. But
well, I mean, Brunswick, they made bowling balls, so presumably it's bowling balls
bowling
and something
ball.
Else.
Wood pulp from the lanes.
So you really don't know what Brunswick stew is, even though we've talked about it.
Is it a fish stew?
It could be. You know what? I'll bet you our producer, Jim Lavoulis, will find out what Brunswick stew is.
Okay.
It'll be on the next show. But okay. This one is from Robert. How long and at what temperature until stock pot ready? I've recently begun roasting the turkey neck and wingtips with the bird. The result of that has been a silkier, more collagen-thickened broth. So 325-ish till the bones smell done. And that's from Robert in the town of Wright.
Is he asking about roasting it first?
Yes, the subject heading, I should have read that. Yeah. Roasting bones.
325, yeah, I usually roast mine a little higher. I guess I'm like a 350, 400 kind of girl. But the turkey neck is the best part to use, like the backbone and the neck. And you do get all of that collagen out of the bone and out of the joints, and it's good for you, A. And it makes like this gelatinous, awesome stock when you're done.
So you think maybe a little hotter than 325?
Yeah, but if 325 is working for you, just do what works for you. Everybody's oven is different. Everybody's process is different. So if 325 works for you, 400 works for me.
Roger that. Okay, back to the phones. And John in New Lebanon. John, you're on.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
This is John. Hi. I've got a chunk of venison, butt end of it, that I put in the crock pot. And I heard on the listening to the program about adding bread. And I've added all the spices. I think maybe I put too many things in there.
Okay.
Hot peppers, this, that. Is there anything that when you're cooking venison that you really suggest that you maybe there's something that I ground up parsley and put that in there? I don't know if that's what you normally use, but I'm using everything I have.
I ate
onions, garlic.
Yeah, spices, I grew up eating a ton of venison. That's pretty much most of the meat that we ate growing up was venison. And anything that's got a really robust tomato flavor works. So you could do tomato, bay leaf, onion, carrot, celery. Carrot, celery, onion are kind of like, that's what you should always include. But Tomato always works really good with venison, and then also anything with a really lush fruit undertone. So some red wine or some port wine that you would cook down almost to roast the venison. But if you're just looking for a venison stew, there's a great website by Hank Shaw. You can just Google him. And he does all wild meat, and he's his first book, I think, was called Hunt, Gather, Cook, and it's got so many good venison recipes in it. So I definitely encourage you to check that out.
Hey, John, while you're on the phone, do you know what Brunswick stew is?
I'm all ears.
Okay, well, since you're making a stew with venison and maybe tomato-based, our producer just handed me this Brunswick stew. Our recipes for Brunswick stew vary greatly.
Okay.
Usually tomato-based stew with lima beans, butter beans, okra, corn, vegetables. And claims of authenticity call for squirrel, rabbit, or opossum meat, but chicken is most commonly used. So maybe some venison, eh?
I wonder what Brunswick is after. If it's like Brunswick, Georgia, Brunswick, Maine.
That it does not say, but we'll have that answer for you on a later show. John, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, but interestingly, also tomato-based.
Right. So venison maybe, and tomato, hand in hand.
All right, over to Judy in Oneonta. Judy.
Hi, I was just calling with a quick suggestion for the woman that was looking for a vegetarian bouillon or broth.
Yeah.
Rapunzel and Organic Gourmet.
Okay.
Both make a decent tasting low salt version.
Okay. That sounds good.
And Brunswick is squirrel.
Oh, have you had it?
I actually had to make it when we had a rule of thumb. If my brother's caught or killed something, we had to figure out a way to prepare it.
Same in my house growing up, Judy. Yep.
There you go. Hey, listen, Judy, if you want to make some more, come to my backyard. I have about 1,000 squirrels back there. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Evie, or is it Evie in Kingston?
It's Evie.
You're on.
Thank you. Y'all are really a lot of fun, and so this is a vegan question, which I hope you don't find annoying.
No.
People ask, if you're vegan, what do you miss the most? And I always say my friends. I miss my mother's matzo ball soup, and all the recipes for matzo balls. I come up with a good soup, but all the recipes for matzo balls call for egg and 2 tablespoons of the stock. Can you give me another binder that might work?
Yes. Open up a can of chickpeas and drain out the
chickpeas.
Yeah, don't use the chickpea. Use the water, the goopy water that the chickpea is in, and whip that. Like if you have a electric hand mixer or something, till it's frothy, and use that. If you can find a matzo ball recipe that just uses the egg white. Use that recipe and then substitute out the egg white for, it's called aquafaba. It's just.
But that wouldn't be vegan then, would it?
Aquafaba?
Aquafaba. No, because it is vegan because you don't use the egg white. Instead of the egg white, you use the chickpea liquid.
Oh, interesting.
And, yeah.
That is really interesting. And I'll research that. I want to know how it gets that.
It's all that starch, I think, from soaking the chickpeas.
Okay.
Yeah, and it helps to bind everything together. So that's what I would
try. Will give that a try. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
good luck.
Evie. We appreciate it. This one came in via email. Subject heading, add umami to my beef stew. Recently, I made a beef stew in my new Dutch oven. It came out wonderfully, but there was a little of the... What is it? Umami? Flavor there. Something a little savory was missing. I was thinking of adding some gravy master next time. Do you have any other suggestions? And that's Lucas in Saratoga.
Yeah. I add a Worcestershire sauce or a little bit of soy sauce.
Yeah.
And those seem to both kind of kick that up. But the best thing I can tell you that people always underestimate is tomato paste. And when you're cooking all your vegetables, add a tablespoon of tomato paste. Use the kind that you squirt out in like the little painting tube instead of in the can.
Yeah. Why not the can? You can get little cans.
Yeah, but you never use the whole can unless you need the whole 4 ounces. And then it like molds and gets weird and becomes like a creature in the back of your fridge. the tube, you just squeeze it out and it always stays fresh.
I didn't know.
So just add that when you cook your vegetables down, like when you add... Do your onion and your carrot and your celery, and then you add your garlic in. Do a little squirt of that tomato paste and cook that. Just mix it all together. And when it starts to stick, when you run your wooden spoon on the bottom of your Dutch oven and you see like the trail from where the spoon went and all the tomato is sticking, that's when you add in your liquid and you add it in slowly.
Oh,
and
it
gives a huge, huge depth of flavor that maybe you've been missing.
Why slowly?
Otherwise, it just gets kind of clumpy. So if you add it in slowly, like making gravy.
Let's go back to the phones. Deanna Fox, our guest. John in Pattersonville. John, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I had an opportunity to take a course in cooking in France, and I wanted to share two secrets that I learned from that course that maybe others don't know.
All right.
One is you never make stock without leek, at least under French rules.
Mm-hmm.
So leeks are an essential part. And the other part was when you're browning the vegetables before you put the liquid into the stock, put a little bit of sugar, like a teaspoon or a tablespoon of sugar in, and it helps with the browning and makes a lot more flavor on the bottom of the pan.
Right. So instead of the sugar, I do the tomato paste because it has such concentrated sugars in it. So that's another reason why I use the tomato paste.
Okay.
It's really great. But I totally agree with you with leeks. Leeks are so tasty.
Well, John, thank you for the call. We go over to line six. And guess who is on the line here? It's Rocco and Troy. You're on.
Hey,
buddy.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Someone called about jazzing up pasta fagioli.
Okay.
And very simple, especially around this time of year when it's really cold and bitter and you want something to warm you up, you can slice up thinly slices of pepperoni or hot soppressata. And you can either saute that with your onions when you make your sauce, or if you're already beyond that, place it into your pasta fagioli, or make tiny meatballs like Italian wedding soup.
Yeah.
And add that to it, which will make the kids want to eat it, because if they just see beans and pasta. And you're right, Deanna, about most people overcook the pasta. The key is to undercook the pasta, and while it's simmering, to let it finish cooking.
Right.
So you do it not even al dente, like before it hits al dente. And Brunswick stew comes from Brunswick, Georgia.
Ah, I knew you'd know.
And I have a customer who was from Brunswick, Georgia, and she gave me an incredible recipe that her grandfather would make it. But the key to, she told me, because it's chicken, it's pork, it's beef, it's carrots, it's potatoes, it's whatever
squirrel
you have around, but it has to be ground.
Ah.
You have to put everything into basically some type of masher.
Yeah.
And everything is mashed. And she said her grandfather used to cook this outside in a big pot and then jar it. And but it's a real southern matter of fact, around here where you can get Brunswick stew, but she told me it wasn't real Brunswick stew, is Dinosaur Barbecue offers it.
Well,
I don't know if you wanted to try it, but she said that's not real, but that's what it is.
Okay. Well, I got to tell you, Rocco, before you go, that Deanna's Italian wedding soup is fantastic. You should try it.
Oh, I bet. And with the little meatballs, so just you do the same thing with the pasta fagioli.
Sounds good.
Is it just like the greens and beans with sausage I brought over?
No. It's a little, there are more ingredients, I would say.
More ingredients. Yeah. Cool.
But equally delicious. Hey, Happy New Year, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, Rocco. And it's Caroline in Loudonville. Caroline.
I was raised in Alabama, and it was very common at the time, 40s, 50s, for any organization that was needing to raise money, Kiwanis Club, schools, what have you, churches, would have what was called a barbecue. It's not the same thing that you speak of in the North when you say you have a barbecue. The men would dig a pit and put pigs on it and roast the pigs for at least 24 hours, and the women would make the Brunswick stew. And the fella who just spoke didn't mention Irish potatoes, but they were an important part of it, and okra as well. My brother and I make it every year when vegetables are fresh, and then freeze it so that we have it at this time of the year.
Yeah.
But it is a wonderful, wonderful stew that has all kinds of vegetables and whatever you have available in it.
So I was just not that long ago in Brunswick, Georgia, and I spent like a considerable amount of time there and did not have any Brunswick stew. I ate a lot of other interesting things, but I feel like now I need to go back.
Well, I think it's less commonly made now. But
yeah.
For one thing, it takes quite a lot of time. Mm-hmm. It would consume a day. And interestingly, I married a fellow from Maine, mm-hmm. and his aunt gave me a Maine recipe book that had Brunswick stew in it.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So maybe it comes from two places.
Could be.
I guess so.
Well, Caroline, thank you very much for the call, and Happy New Year, and enjoy your weekend. Stay warm. And over now to Line 7 and Barry in Scotia. Barry, you're on.
Hi. I sort of... a left field question. I heard that turmeric on a show about Alzheimer's, said that turmeric seems to have some qualities of preventing the loss of gray brain matter mm-hmm. late in life. So my general question is, can you tell me a little bit about turmeric, and can you suggest some foods where you might either use it or find it in?
Yeah. I love turmeric in curries. So I make a lot of like vegetable curries. They're uh-huh. something nice and warm, warming in the winter. And I use a lot of turmeric in it, but I use the dried turmeric in it. You can buy now, I've seen in grocery stores locally, just in the last year maybe, where you can buy whole turmeric root, and people use it for like juicing. So in a lot of juice bars, you'll see turmeric.
You mean root or by the actual plant?
The actual root, yeah. Just
so
like
you can make a juice out of it.
Yeah, just like you would see ginger. So I'm guessing that maybe, I'm sure it's really potent, but just like fresh ginger when you grate it, it's really potent.
You could actually put it in a drink or drink it straight with something else?
Yeah, if you juice it. But I think that you could probably just grate it like you would grate fresh ginger into something.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. It's awfully tasty.
Maybe good with vodka?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
All right, let's get another call or two in here before we find out what Deanna's up to. David in Rensselaerville. David, you're on.
Oh, yes. Hi, guys.
Hey.
I'm stuck up here because of the weather, and I looked in the refrigerator, and the only thing that I could see that I could possibly cook were ham hocks that I buy from my lab.
Yeah.
So I gave Ruby one of them, threw the other three in a slow cooker, and just added as anything I could find in the refrigerator, mm-hmm. and it was delicious.
Mm. Ham hocks are so good. If you make a split pea soup, which I almost made today, you got to have ham hocks.
Oh, yeah.
You can make a good potato and corn chowder with ham hocks. You can just make like a stock instead of using chicken bones or turkey or whatever, beef bones. Excuse me. You can use ham hock, and man, is it good.
David, I got to tell you something. Our call screener put on the form here, the computer screen, recipe for dog food soup. I didn't know where you were going with this, but it worked out okay.
Well, I have to say that the ham hocks cost about $4.50. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a cheap way to have a wonderful meal.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Well, stay warm up there. What's the temperature in Rensselaerville right now, David?
No, it's about 5.
With a wind chill of about -18 or so.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, and I'm eating dog food soup.
Well, hang in there with the dog food soup. Well, thank you very much for the call. And Deanna Fox, mm-hmm. what is happening with you?
Oh, goodness. I've got a bunch of cooking classes coming up.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Different drummers?
Yes, a different drummer. So I have a dumpling class coming up, Dumplings Around the World. But I think that's sold out. There's another date in February. So if you go onto the website, you'll find that. I have a ski lodge cooking class. So all these warm, wonderful things that will warm you up when you come in.
But this is not at a ski lodge. This is at different drummers.
It's at different drummers.
And you're going to learn about things that you cook in a ski lodge.
Well, it's the general theme. So things that you would eat when you come in from snowshoeing or skiing or whatever you're doing.
You got to make mulled wine for sure.
Mulled wine. We're going to make hot cocoa with homemade marshmallow, which is really easy.
Right.
Sweet and sour meatballs, all sorts of good stuff.
Oh, fantastic.
Smoked salmon. Yeah. And then I have a Provence class, so the food of Provence.
Oh, really?
At the end of the month. On January 27th, I'm moderating a panel at the Tenbrook Mansion about some booze history. So.
Oh, really?
Former Food Friday guest Craig Gravina will be there. John Curtin from Albany Distilling and Scott Veltman, who brews. He is brewing both at City at the pump station, Albany Brewing at the pump station, and then Indian Ladder Farm. So they've made a thing called Flip, or they are making a thing called Flip, and I'll be moderating that panel.
So do you have a designated driver for that?
Yes.
You better be
careful.
But
tickets are very limited, so okay. Get them while you can. You can get them through the Albany Convention and Tourism Bureau. And then I also have, on March 10th, I'll be doing a presentation at the New York State Museum about warfront cooking. So anything, the history, how people in World War I would cook donuts and pot helmets and the birth of canned food because of the Napoleonic Wars and all
fantastic.
Sorts of stuff.
Well,
come on down.
You're going to be busy.
Yes, busy, but that's good.
Thank you for making time for us, Deanna Fox. Support comes from River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market featuring over 80 local farms and food vendors every Saturday, 9 to 2, in downtown Troy. Winter Indoor Market in the atrium, troymarket.org. Well, look, it's going to be very cold this weekend. You've been hit over the head with this for days now, but I want to reiterate, if you have to go outside, make sure you bundle up. Layers are a good thing. You can get frostbite very quickly in the cold weather to come. Meantime, thanks for being with us all week long. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Dina Salzman took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks again to Deanna Fox for being here. And have a lovely, warm, hopefully weekend. Alan will be back in the big chair for a medical Monday on Monday morning. Right now, stand by for news.